Hello, fellow Rebel Capitals. Hope you're well. So I wanted to go over some money aggregates because right now everybody is trying to figure out if we're going to have a reacceleration in consumer prices or potentially a deflationary bust. So I want to look at what's happening behind the scenes with the banking system, and more importantly, with the amount of currency units chasing goods and services, or the amount of currency units available to pay off existing debt, and then see if we can come to some conclusions. So let's go right over to a chart of M2 money supply going all the way back to 1870. That's right. On most of these YouTube videos, the quote-unquote experts, they say, we're going all the way back. Look at this chart. It goes back to 1992. It's like, okay, thanks. Or what the financial planners like to do is go right back to like 1980. So they just show you the S&P 500 as an example, or the returns from the S&P 500 since interest rates have gone from 18% all the way down to 0%. They say, see, look at that. Just buy the dip. It works every time. Yeah, if interest rates had nothing to do with it. But anyway, we're going all the way back to 1870. Now, I want you to focus on this black line. There we go. And if you can look right about the 40% mark in the chart there, going over, you can see that the black line goes sub-zero. In fact, it did a couple times there in the late 1800s, into the 1900s as well. But in the 1930s, the Great Depression, it not only goes below zero, it goes below negative 10%. I mean, that is tough to get your head around. But since the Great Depression, we have never had M2 money supply go into the negative, actually decline, with the exception of right now. So understanding that the actual amount of currency units. Now, Snyder would rightfully say, well, this doesn't really represent all of quote unquote money because you can use treasuries and you can use all these cash equivalents. Yeah, I get it. But I'm just trying to focus on the amount of currency units the average Joe and Jane, or the corporation, the small and mid-size enterprise, how many currency units they have in their bank account. That's all I'm talking about right here. So if you want to call it something other than money, go nuts. We'll just call it currency units in bank accounts. And why I like to focus on that is because that's what people are using to pay rent. And maybe more importantly, that's what people are using to pay off their debt, their student loan. Well, that's not a thing anymore. But the mortgages, Biden's forgiving all of those. But other credit card debt, car loan, etc. So now what I want to do is look at this H6 data that we've been using on quite a few videos. And to be brutally honest, I'm still trying to get my head around this because there's so many variables here. And when you're dealing with non-bank entities and banking entities and then dollars potentially going offshore due to money going to Ukraine, or maybe just the trade deficit still running at $60 billion roughly per month, there's a lot of moving parts, to say the least. And then, you know, Janet Yellen, when she's collecting money into the TGA, if she's using that those bank reserves to go ahead and pay off JP Morgan, right? In other words, let's say JP Morgan has a treasury that's maturing. So she has to pay JP Morgan $1 billion because that's how much they have in treasuries that are maturing, let's say today, right? Well, that's got to come from the TGA, and that's going to reduce the amount in the TGA, but that's going to go to the reserve account balance that JP Morgan has with the Federal Reserve. Those are both liabilities of the Fed, in which case you would have no impact whatsoever. None, zero, nada on any of these money aggregates, right? So you got to try to sit there and think about, okay, if the TGA is going from a trillion down to zero, how much of those $1 trillion are going to pay banks, including the Federal Reserve, or how many of those, and also how many of those quote-unquote dollars are going to pay off entities that have maturing treasuries outside of the United States? Because that, or that, in addition to the banks, would have zero impact on these money aggregates that we're looking at. So you've got to realize that this is just her doing business, if you will, from non-bank entities, whether that's extracting currency from the money aggregates or from people's checking accounts via taxes or via them buying treasuries, or her spending it back into the economy with quote unquote fiscal stimulus. You hear this all the time right now. In fact, I just put out a tweet where Zero Hedge was talking about this, the fiscal stimulus. Holy cow, the deficits are 6% of GDP and they're going higher. Yeah, I completely agree. Absolutely. But if we had all of this government fiscal stimulus, you would have to see the fiscal stimulus showing up in the money aggregates. Because if it's not showing up in the money aggregates, then how on earth is it stimulus? I mean, let's just take things down to the very, very basics to keep it super simple, right? If Janet Yellen or the government spends $1 trillion in fiscal stimulus into the economy, it has to go into a bank account. If it doesn't, those currency units are not available to buy stuff, therefore increase aggregate demand, therefore be stimulus in the first place. It's got to go into a bank account, right? So let's look at the totals of bank accounts to see what has happened since, let's say, 2022, or in this case, it's November of 2022. I want you to look at M1 money supply. And this is simply broken down by currency circulation, just green pieces of paper, demand deposits, basically checking accounts. And then we've got other liquid deposits. The majority of other liquid deposits, savings accounts. So when I look at M1, I think about it in terms of, okay, we're talking about checking accounts and savings. And then when you get into M2, they take M1 and then they include small denomination time deposits like CDs and then retail money market funds. And where this gets really crazy and where this gets into stiff drink time, proper stiff drink time, is when we start to analyze what's going on with these retail money market funds. And nobody is talking about this at all. And I'm not going to sit here and say this could be a black swan. Maybe it could. I don't know. Again, I haven't really fully got my head around all of the moving parts. I'm definitely trying, I can assure you. And just the way I am, I'm not going to rest easy until I actually do figure this stuff out. I can't stand not knowing how this stuff works. So, but before we get into the retail money market funds, let's start with demand deposits. Because if the government is spending all of this money into the economy, you would think that first and foremost, that would go into someone's checking account, right? If you're getting a Social Security check from the government, what do you do with it? Like, you don't bury it in your backyard, right? You don't burn it. You take it down to the local bank and you deposit it. And there, most likely you deposit it into your checking account. Or if Janet Yellen pays Lockheed Martin or something, okay, fine. Well, the money goes into their checking account or their bank account, period. So we start by going back to November of 2022, when checking account balances in aggregate total is domestic banks for non-bank entities, around $5 trillion, okay? $5 trillion with a T. So then we fast forward, you know, say a year and a half or so to March of 2024, and it's $5 trillion. It's the exact same. And I know we've discussed this a couple times in recent videos, but it's really, really important that we include this in our analysis when we're trying to figure out the probabilities of 2024 and 2025 seeing a reacceleration in consumer price inflation, or potentially seeing the opposite, which would be a deflationary bust, where I agree the government's response would most likely take us into that next wave of inflation. But it's all about what happens first. You see, it's the sequence of events. And it's very important to understand the sequence of events because it's two completely separate portfolios. Hey guys, I want to invite each and every one of you to join me May 31st through June 2nd in Orlando for Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the annual conference I do. And this year, it's going to be absolutely incredible. We're going to have some of your favorites there as speakers, guys like Jeff Snyder, Mike Green, Real Estate, Kenny McElroy. We're going to have Robert Barnes. They're talking about freedom and liberty. Even Rich Cooper is going to be there discussing red pill issues. This event is all about giving you the intel, the insider information you need to not only survive 2024, but thrive. The whole reason I created this event was to give you the tools you need to build the future you deserve for yourself and your family. This is an event you are not going to want to miss. So to get more information, go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. You can see a full list of speakers we've had in the past. You can see clips from past events. And most importantly, you can get your tickets. As we get closer to the event, the tickets go up in price. So you're going to want to get those ASAP at rebelcapitalistlive.com. And we will see you in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd. Getting back to this, you say, George, well, maybe these people are just taking all of this fiscal stimulus that the government is spending, and maybe they're just putting in their savings account. Okay. But again, we go from 12 trillion, 12.6 trillion down to 10.7. That's a decrease of almost $2 trillion. $2 trillion. That's crazy. And then you look at the remainder of M2, which CDs, and then this pretty much, you could argue that this is where the savings is going. And I think this is a good argument because you're most likely able to get a higher interest rate as a CD or a retail money market fund. So why wouldn't they? But here's where it gets really crazy. What are the retail money market funds doing? And by the way, they've got $1.7 trillion right now. Well, I'm not a money market fund manager, but as far as I know, the majority of the retail money market funds are investing in repo, or they're just they're lending in repo, or they're just simply buying T-bills, right? And if they're lending in repo, they're taking those T-bills as collateral. So let's think about this for a moment, because if you deposit money with a retail money market fund, whatever you deposited with them, let's say it came out of savings, let's say you deposit $10,000, it comes out of your savings account, and then it goes over into the retail money market fund. So it's basically like a deposit that you have with this fund. So M2 money supply doesn't change, but they take the money and they basically say, give you an IOU. And then they take the money and let's say they buy a treasury, they give it to Janet Yellen, the money's gone, disappears. And those bank reserves go down into the TGA, right? And then what happens is Janet Yellen spends that money back out into the economy, or maybe she doesn't. Maybe it goes over to Ukraine, or maybe it goes somewhere outside of the United States. Because if it was going back into the economy, we would see that same $10,000 show up in demand deposits, or we would see it show up in savings. So you'd have the $10,000 go out of savings, go into the retail money market fund, and then go right back when Janet Yellen spent it, then it would go right back into savings, which would be a net increase. You see, because now that person has $10,000 in their checking or savings account that they didn't have before when they got that check from Janet Yellen. But you still have the IOU from the money market fund that is showing up on your balance sheet. It's showing up on their balance sheet as a liability. And it's also being double counted, basically, in M2 money supply. So when we step back and we think about, okay, well, we know there's been an explosion in money going into these retail money market funds. What happens if that reverses? See, here's where it gets really, really interesting. So to keep this super simple, what I'd like you to do for this thought experiment is just pretend there's $5 in each one of these four accounts. Forget currency for a moment. It's flat anyway. Just focus on the checking accounts, savings accounts, M1, and then CDs and retail money market funds. And let's just assume for a moment that there's $10 in each account. So $10 in demand and checking, $10 in savings, $10 in CDs, and $10 in money market funds.
Okay.
So if those people that have money in the money market fund say, nah, I want that back. Okay, great. Well, they can either wait till those treasuries mature, or they can go ahead and sell those treasuries. But regardless of which they do or which option they choose, the money to pay them back is going to have to come from And one, it's going to have to come from another money aggregate, right? So you've only got $40 total. So in order to pay off this 10 bucks, you've got to take the 10 bucks from somewhere else. Okay. And then the $10, let's say everyone wants to extract the total from the money market funds. So the balance for the money market funds goes from $10 down to zero. And then that money goes back over to M1, but the money had to come out of M1 to begin with to pay off the money market fund. You see what just happened? So what happened is we went from $40 of M2 down to 15, because these retail money market funds are effectively double counting the amount of currency units that are available to chase goods and services or pay off consumer debt, right? Here's where it gets scary. So if we understand that the money aggregate, we'll look at M1, is plummeting. And again, we have not seen this since the Great Depression. Now you say it went up a lot. Now, again, you guys know from watching my videos that this is fake news. This increase right here, that's just an adjustment they did to the way they measure it. So you've got to look at it from right here. So it is true. We have this massive increase and a massive decrease. We're back down to where it's pretty much flat. But even a decrease this substantial over the last 2 years should vastly impact people's ability to pay off their debt. And that's if the debt was standing still, if the debt was flat. Let's look at total credit to private non-financial sector. And we can see that the debt is not going down with the rate of money supply. The debt is increasing to a point now where it's at 40 trillion, 40 with a trillion. And that's based on just this metric. So you sit there and say, George, how can this be going up in the United States if bank credit, you talk about that all the time, is pretty much flat? Well, that's a good question. What you're doing is you're having the money being lent out multiple times. So as an example, XYZ Bank creates a $1 billion loan. That's money that didn't exist before. All right, cool. But then they lend that to, let's just say, a hedge fund. Okay, well, the hedge fund takes that and lends it to someone else. So you've got $2 billion worth of debt, but bank credit was only impacted by $1 billion. You see? So that's how you're getting 40 trillion, it's probably a lot more than that, but that's how you're getting 40 trillion and an increase in overall debt with bank credit being flat. Because we know at the end of the day, the banks are the ones that create the majority of the money supply. So when you look at $40 trillion in debt, it's going up and up and up and up and up. And then you look at a money supply aggregate, it's going down and down and down and down. At a certain point, rubber meets the road. And unless you have a massive increase in velocity, which is hard to do if you're going into a recession. I mean, we just got the jobs numbers and those didn't look good. We'll see if that trend continues. But the unemployment rate went up to 3.9. Usually when you start to see the unemployment rate creep up, that means you're getting a slowdown in economic activity, which is usually what happens right before you go into an economic recession. But the bottom line is we can look at these money supply aggregates and they're mind-blowing. Right now, it's $17, $18 trillion in just M1. You say, my gosh, that's so much money. Holy cow. Right. But you got to look at the debt just based on this one metric. I'm sure it's a lot higher than that, is 40 trillion. So if you've got 40 trillion going like this and let's just say 20 trillion of money supply going like this, that one of those has to adjust. One of those has to adjust. And usually it's the amount of debt coming down and not as a result of repayment, as a result of default. And that's when the unemployment skyrockets. And that's when you get an economic depression, exactly what we saw in the 1930s when we saw the money supply plummet to a point where it was negative 10%. And so the main takeaway from this video and what I wanted to point out to you guys is not just that the money supply aggregates are going down, but they're going down to a much greater degree than the statistics would even lead you to believe because of this double counting between the money that's going from the savings account into the retail money market fund. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Very interesting stuff. And I want to be clear, I do not have all the answers. And there are so many moving parts here. Like I just said, with the non-banks and the banks and going offshore and onshore. But this is a big deal. When you see something that only happens once every 100 years or that hasn't happened in about 100 years, and the last time it did happen, we had one of the, if not the most significant financial crisis in American history. It's something you not only have to pay attention to, but it's something you have to do everything in your power to try to understand to the best of your ability. That's the bottom line. And on that note, guys, I want to encourage you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalists Live. This is something we're going to be talking about a lot there. I might even do my presentation on this specifically so we can really go into a deep dive. But this is going to be, I think, the best Rebel Capitalists Live we've done. It's in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd. You can go to rebelcapitalistlive.com to check out the list of speakers, the VIP guests like Kiyosaki, my good buddy. He's going to be there rubbing elbows with everybody. And you can also register at rebelcapitalistlive.com. We'll see you in the next video, and we'll see you in Orlando.